Totally Football Show, full continental today. Barca at Levante get busted. Kovac at Bayern done and dusted. Fans in Verona leave us disgusted. And PSG at Dijon failed to cut the deficit and lose. We round up the big stories and preview the midweek Champions League action in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Wow, really looking forward to today's show. Ever so much to talk about and some really top continental talent to do it with. We've got Julien Laurens here.
Hello, James.
Hi, Jules. Who are you texting?
No, I was emailing someone about Arsene Wenger.
About Arsene Wenger? Munich, Bayern Munich?
You're not texting Raf about that?
No, Raf. I've got it in front of me.
James Horncastle's here.
Directly.
So
don't
is.
Text me, say it straight to my face.
So is Rafael Honigstein. And also Alvaro Romeo. Hi, Alvaro.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. What an incredible week right across Europe. Big teams falling, managers getting fired. Hence the discussion about Arsene Wenger going to Bayern Munich. Let's have a quick check on the big stories. I mean, there's a lot of Champions League to talk about, but let's begin, shall we, with the dramatic events in Munich. Rafa.
Yeah, dramatic events because Bayern lost 5-1 away to Frankfurt on Saturday. Boateng was sent off after 9 minutes, then Bayern collapsed completely. And I think the club were sort of tempted to give him a couple more games.
Niko Kovac,
until the international break. But in a talk in the afternoon, he actually offered his resignation, at which point Bayern said, you know what, it's probably a good idea. He felt that the game was up. He'd lost a lot of backing. If there was any left in the dressing room, there was no secret that at board level, with the exception of Uli Hoeneß, the president, who's himself resigning or stepping down from his position in 10 days' time, there wasn't much patience left for him.
All right. Well, we'll hear very shortly who's likely to be taking over, whether it is going to be Arsene Wenger rocking up there in Bavaria. But Bayern, not the only big team to lose this weekend. In Spain, for example, Alvaro, Real Madrid held 0-0 by Real Betis, and Barcelona losing as well.
Yes, they lost 3-1 against Levante, and they are still topping the table, which tells you that La Liga at the minute doesn't have any team that is definitely like shining or collecting a lot of points. So that makes you think that it's not how bad you are, but how bad you are in relation to the rest of your rivals. Right. So Real Madrid is not doing well, Atletico neither, Barcelona neither, but since none of them is running away with the title yet, every club seems to have some patience, even though Ernesto Valverde is starting to get many critics, also Simeone for having mastered only 2 wins over the last couple of months, and Real Madrid cannot score, as simple as that. They didn't score against Betis, and they seem to be incapable of producing like heavy score lines.
Right, much more Spanish news to come. The big dramatic news in Ligue 1, Jules, meanwhile, was PSG. Their third defeat of the season, this time to bottom of the table, Dijon.
Yes, and it was quite unexpected on Friday night, although they just didn't turn up. They didn't really fancy it. It looked like they took the lead. Kylian Mbappe, who started the continuation of that incredible start where the last 14 goals of the team has been scored by either Icardi, Di Maria or Mbappe. So they're very reliant on those three, but yeah, they just didn't want it, and Dijon wanted it more, and maybe they were already thinking about the Halloween party they had in Paris on Saturday night, the whole squad. Yeah, where they clearly seemed to enjoy that more than the game at Dijon on Friday night.
Meanwhile, in Italy, James, the big clubs did win, but there was a big defeat for the league in general with yet more racist behaviour from fans.
Yes, aimed at Mario Balotelli, and I don't think there is any question of whether it happened or not, which is exactly what the Hellas Verona president, coach,
right,
and even the mayor of Verona,
oh wow,
want you to think that Balotelli was not abused in this game. If you look at the video that has come out, which was actually posted by a Verona fan,
right,
as evidence that there was no racist abuse occurring, and you can audibly hear the monkey chants.
So basically, Balotelli's long been a figure of hate, or someone they've liked to wind up since his days playing for Inter when he was a teenager, and there's been problems for him there. They've had problems with other black players before, Frank Kessié of Milan earlier this season. When he arrived there with Brescia, this time around, the crowd were having a go. He lost his temper, was provoked enough to take the football and basically hoof it into the Cordoba at the fans, and then made to leave the field. His teammates and the Verona teammates managed to convince him to stay on the field. The referee went through the kind of protocol of making an announcement to the home supporters, and the game continued, and Balotelli actually scored an absolute screamer against Verona. Brescia ended up losing 2-1, but still it was a nice way for him to respond, and there's been a lot of solidarity for him. But as you say, Verona themselves, the key people in all this, once again are saying, yeah, no, nothing happened here.
Absolutely, and this is consistent with what they did after the Kessi abuse early in the season, where they put out a terrible tweet, one of the worst gaffes you can ever see, essentially saying, we didn't hear any of this abuse. Obviously, the players who suffered it were just stunned by the decibel level of the crowd at the Bentegodi. And it's this refusal to acknowledge and accept responsibility for what is going on, which I think to some extent is reflective of a lot of Serie A, in that clubs and their owners are often in bed with the ultras. I think the only sign of encouragement, I suppose, is the amount of foreign ownership that there is in the league now, and a lot of those foreign owners coming from the States, where, you know, if this were to happen in the NFL or the NBA, there'd be a commissioner, there'd be the president of the league who would essentially lead on this matter. And that isn't happening in Serie A. And so you have clubs like Fiorentina, Roma and Milan really wanting to change the situation, and have actually, in Roma's case, enacted a kind of adaptation amendment of the rules where they can actually, just independently of waiting for the police, you know, waiting for the league, they can identify and then issue a banning order,
right,
as we see often in this country when there is racist abuse. But it's clear from Verona's words and their reaction to the Balotelli abuse, which is incontrovertible, that they are unwilling to take that action.
All right, well, they're pretty banged to rights this time, so we will wait to see what La Liga does about them. We'll touch on that and, of course, all the other Italian stories later on. But after this, let's get cracking with a particularly bumper weekend of Bundesliga news.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Whoa, that sounds like a cracking atmosphere. That was the Berlin Derby, Rafa, which you attended this weekend.
I was, and it was really a lot of fun.
Right, okay. Union. Yes. They beat Hertha.
They beat Hertha for the first time ever at home. They hadn't played each other that often, of course, because the war got in the way for many years. Since it has come down, they were twice up against each other in Bundesliga 2. But this was the first ever derby at top flight level. And it's interesting because the rivalry is somewhat manufactured, because they actually used to get on really well when they were separated. Hertha was the favourite Berlin club, West Berlin club, of many East Berliners who wouldn't support any other club in the GDR, but sort of always looked across the wall and secretly tuned into German television to follow the fortunes of Hertha, and went to travel when Hertha played somewhere where it was accessible for them in another communist state. And they kind of fraternized even when the war came down. But over the years, there was a comparison made to sort of someone you have a pen friend relationship with, that, you know, you write and write and it's lovely, but then you start meeting them and you're thinking, maybe they're not really the great love of my life. That was one of the quotes from the Union president. And now it's turned into sort of a real aggro-filled hate fest.
Was it quite feisty this weekend?
It was quite, quite aggressive. There was riot police everywhere. There was a ultras march to the stadium from Union. There were lots of flares. There were missiles being fired deliberately into the crowd from the Hertha section. Oof. The game was nearly abandoned. One flare went down and landed at the feet, as it happens, of the family of Sebastian Polter, who is one of the Union players who came on.
He scored, didn't he?
To take the penalty.
Right.
So his two children and his girlfriend were nearly hit by one of those flares. He didn't know that at the time. But yeah, he scored a 90th minute penalty to give them the win. And it was history, history in the making. It was despite all the sort of the trouble and the violence and lots of hand-wringing in Germany, you know, the ultras and the flares and all that stuff. It was actually really good, old-fashioned, slightly sort of edgy fun. Like football used to be. I mean, remember football being like that in the 80s. And
proper naughty.
Proper, not proper naughty, but naughty-ish. And it was amazing. It was an amazing experience.
And fantastic result, as you say, for Union for the first time ever to get that result. In terms of historic events, going back to Bayern Munich, I imagine that's pretty unprecedented for them to get rid of their manager, what, 10, 11 games into the season?
Not really, because Carlo Ancelotti was fired in October in the second season. Klinsmann was fired in his first season.
All right.
In April.
So not at all unprecedented.
Not unprecedented. But
and this is
what happened was that, you know, we've been talking about this before. Kovac went into the season already slightly damaged because of what happened before, because his work hadn't really ticked enough boxes for Bayern. You know, they wanted someone with a footballing identity. They wanted someone who can really improve players, to help the players. And he had a fairly basic approach to football. There was a lot of emphasis on defensive positioning, on effort, on moving, on fighting, on togetherness. But there was no underlying bigger idea. And very quickly, I think, a team that was still exposed, you know, by a big percentage to Guardiola, or to Nagelsmann in some instances, or to Diego Simeone when it comes to Lucas Hernandez, or Jurgen Klopp in case of Coutinho, they expect more from a coach. And he basically lost the dressing room a while ago, and the results papered over what wasn't just cracks, but actually a huge sort of gaping chasm that had opened up between him and the team.
Them losing this weekend 5-1 against Eintracht Frankfurt, is there any suggestion that that was the team actually going, let's just get rid of this manager?
I don't think it's that bad. But I think subconsciously, if you don't believe in your boss, then maybe you just behave slightly differently.
Right.
Maybe you run a little bit less for your teammates. Maybe you think, you know, this is, you go into games with a sort of defeatist attitude that this is not going to work anyway. You know, he, again, doesn't really help us. Or why is he telling us off? That, I mean, he's made a lot of mistakes, but the biggest one over the last few weeks was basically to blame the team. You know, gone was the we didn't play well. It was all about, well, they played really badly. I told them what to do, but unfortunately they once again failed to follow my instructions. At that point, you're basically toast.
Didn't he say before the game against Frankfurt that Frankfurt had the best fans in the country or something? I mean, his communication from the beginning had been pretty poor, right?
The thing about those big jobs is that all of a sudden, every press conference you do, pre and post match, is scrutinised, analysed, which
like
wouldn't have been the case
for Milan, for
exactly.
Example.
And these people get shown up, and such a big part of those jobs is how you present communication. And he was lacking.
The irony was that he was perceived when he took over the job as someone who is very good when it comes to speaking to the players and also projecting this calm image. But he made so many mistakes, so many needless own goals verbally, that a problem then was exacerbated by his inability to sell his story effectively.
Right. He also got quite a few things right. He presided over a league and cup double, won 45 of his 65 games in charge, was also in charge of a renaissance of Robert Lewandowski's goal-scoring stats. Is there any suggestion that maybe things are not going to be wonderfully successful with him out? I mean, who's going to take over, do you think?
Well, there's a number of candidates in the running. Bayern have to now see who is available right now because they don't necessarily want to give it to Hansi Flick, the assistant coach, until the end of the season. That would be quite a long time for a caretaker manager.
Also because they've got the Clásico coming up this weekend, no?
Yeah, I don't think anyone will be in charge by then. The international break is the time when, I mean, anyone in a full-time position.
Right, yeah.
The international break is the time where they will use to really sit down and see, for example, whether Ten Hag will be available now or only in January or only in the summer and what conditions. Ralf Rangnick, who is available right now, you know, does he agree to work in this Bayern construct where you'll have Salihamidzic
having Wenger, who is available?
Arsene Wenger, who's available and who has been mentioned by some of my colleagues in Munich, whose name I haven't heard being mentioned.
What about that other manager who's also available right now? Who, have you heard his name being mentioned? Jose Mourinho.
I thought you meant Sven. Jose's name has not been mentioned.
No.
Okay. No. Allegri's name is still being mentioned, but I think there's probably a sense that he would constitute a gamble, not because of his managerial ability being in question whatsoever, but again, the whole scenario with the foreign manager, with a foreign backroom staff, in a new league, with no German, that this would create too many problems to solve. And Bayern's preferred solution is, of course, to have a German speaker. And Arsene Wenger's German is, of course, very good.
Rafael, I wonder what the crossbar is at Bayern Munich for a manager, because Ancelotti lasted 13, 14 months. Same thing applies to Niko Kovac as well. What is expected from a manager at Bayern? Because obviously the titles are there. Niko Kovac got some titles too.
I mean, winning the league by itself is not quite enough. It saved Kovac from getting fired. Winning the cup saved him then a second time, because I think even if he'd lost the final in Berlin against Leipzig, I think Rummenigge at least would have been quite happy to pull the trigger then. So that is the minimum criteria almost. You know, you win domestically. Then the big challenge is taking a team that doesn't necessarily have the superstars. They've never had superstars in the Messi or Ronaldo bracket over the last 10 years. But as a team, collectively, they've been one of the best sides because they've had really, really good managers who kind of lift everybody. And that is the real challenge. So it's not just about, you know, winning in the Bundesliga, and Bayern's Bundesliga win was very underwhelming last year in points-wise, but also performance-wise, but actually taking Bayern back closer to the very top in European elite. And there was a sense that Kovac might grow into this, that with a new team, new players coming in, a new defence, he would rise to the challenge this year, learn from some of the mistakes and become a better manager and make that next step. But actually, it's gone backwards. So at that point, Bayern just felt we can't lose another 6 months with a guy that is not going anywhere.
Hansi Flick taking charge this midweek as Bayern hosts Olympiakos in the Champions League. Bayern looking very comfortable on top of that group, 5 points clear of Spurs. They have the Clásico coming up at the weekend. It's so tight right now. Borussia Mönchengladbach 3 points clear on top. The next 8 teams in the Bundesliga all within 2 points of each other. Amongst them, another side who are going to be in Champions League action, Leipzig, who had an 8-0 win this weekend against Mainz.
That's right, James. And this is on the back of a 6-1 win in the Cup away to Wolfsburg in midweek. Wow. So they have really started to take all these chances that perhaps they've been missing in the last couple of weeks. You know, we've been talking about Leipzig stuttering and not quite living up to the preseason hype with Nagelsmann and Werner and so on. But now they've exploded into a rich vein of form. Werner himself getting a double hat-trick, 3 goals and 3 assists
in this one
against Mainz. It's all just gelling, and they're looking like the side that we all expected or perhaps hoped for as neutrals, you know, when it comes to really challenging the top two.
You know, since Opta in 06-07 get all the data from all the 5 big leagues, only one player has done better than Werner in all of Europe, and that is Luis Suarez, who scored 4 goals and assisted 3 times against Deportivo in 2016 when he was slim and good.
Insane. Well, how do you feel then if you're Zenit St. Petersburg, who in a really tight Champions League group are now going to be hosting Leipzig this midweek?
I think you feel a little bit frightened because you have to really go for it, having lost the game in Leipzig, albeit narrowly. They took the lead and then Leipzig came back strongly in the second half. Just counter-attacking football, which is sort of in Leipzig's DNA going back to the Ralf Rangnick years, is now at full flight once more, with Werner taking up these sort of inside left positions, a little bit like Thierry Henry used to be, you know, like a wide striker always cutting in. So it looks very good for Leipzig and very difficult as far as Zenit is concerned.
Zenit are in some form of their own right now, still top of the Russian Premier League, although they did draw at home to CSKA on Saturday. If only there was some way to know what their tactics are going to be. I don't know, did you see the wonderful
Ivanovic
clip of Ivanovic on the bench there explaining to his teammate how the team should set up, and then he's up on the big screen. Anyway, well, that's one of the games from a really delicately poised group. Lyon also facing Benfica. We'll chat about that game later. All right, so the Clásico with Dortmund coming up for Bayern Munich at the weekend, and Dortmund facing a really big game in Europe. against Inter. We'll be talking about that after this.
It seems as though Serie A is a bit of a dumping ground these days, doesn't it? Where all the Premier League's footballing flops are sent to get them off the wage bill. It's literally a weekly reminder for Man United of all their very expensive mistakes. But thankfully, with Paddy Power's money back specials, not all your mistakes cost you as much. Get money back as a free bet on football every week. See on site for the latest. Paddy Power, home of the money back special. Selected markets only. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Hey, James, you excited by Inter's trip to Borussia Dortmund?
Yeah, I think it's a Champions League classic. I'm curious to see what Dortmund's reaction to the game in the last round was.
Right.
Because
when they were toothless.
Yes, and Inter were much
ruthless.
Better. Yeah. They might also have Stefano Sensi back as well, since he's been missing since the last international break. And they have, I wouldn't say struggled without him, because I think over the last week, they've had to come up with alternative solutions. And whereas the first kind of half of this third of the season so far was about Inter getting goals from midfield, it's since been about them getting goals from this strike partnership of Lukaku and Lautaro Martinez. And both of them were, again, very good at the weekend in Bologna. Difficult game. And Lautaro, he had a shot which the goalkeeper saved. Lukaku puts in on the rebound and he wins the penalty that ultimately wins them the game. Inter coming back from behind in the final 15 minutes. And Lukaku with 9 goals in 11 games now. And I think over the last week,
best start by anybody at the club since Ronaldo in 1997.
The original Ronaldo, which is really saying something. I think he, in the last week, has shown the best of himself in Inter colours, because they have had a lot of injuries, as Antonio Conte keeps complaining about. There's already this kind of expectation management going on, which is, oh, maybe we can't challenge this year, which clearly they want to challenge this year. They're looking to January for new signings. But yeah, I think one of the reasons for that is because they kind of struggled in a few of their league games, particularly the one against Brescia. And again, you see Lukaku come up big in that game and score when Brescia were on top and Brescia looked like they were going to get something out of that game. And again, here in Bologna, I thought Bologna actually did pretty well without maybe doing enough to win the game. But the game was certainly in the balance, and Lukaku ultimately came up big once more. And they go into this game, obviously, still, I think, needing to get something out of it just because of the way they started. Results-wise in this group with only a point from their first six.
Well, they had to win the last meeting, and they did, 2-0. What kind of rebirth, though, have we seen from Dortmund this weekend?
Rebirth might be putting it a bit too strongly, but they've certainly shown a good reaction since that really terrible show at Inter. They beat Gladbach in the Cup. It was a very difficult game, but they played really well, or reasonably well. And there was very solid performance in a 3-0 win over Wolfsburg at the weekend. And you could just see that either Favre or the team, or maybe a combination of both, have decided, you know, we just can't play this really beautiful passing football without anyone going into the box at any given time. So now they've become a little bit more attacking. They've put more people in dangerous positions, and they looked a lot more convincing when it came to their attempts to create stuff.
Barcelona leading this group, 3 points clear of these two sides, Dortmund and Inter. So this is an absolutely key game to determine who goes through. Barcelona, meanwhile, are going to be hosting Slavia Prague, whom they just about squeaked past in Prague 2 weeks ago.
They were far better than Barcelona. It's miraculous that Barcelona has 7 points in this group, because they deserve to get a heavy defeat in Dortmund. And Inter Milan was far better than them in the first half at Camp Nou. But yeah, Barcelona is getting to this game with plenty of problems on their plate. There are so many things happening at the same time that it's very difficult to have a diagnosis on what's happening, actually, with a manager that doesn't seem to believe on the new players a lot. He's still putting in the lineup some players who are clearly not performing. for instance, Gerard Pique this season, he's not playing well. He's got already 6 or 7 yellows, and the league is just started. Ter Stegen, after the game against Slavia Prague, said that some changes needed to be done, or some improvements were needed, but who is going to trigger this improvement? A manager who doesn't seem to have the authority to do it, a sporting director that we don't know if he's good or not, because we don't know who he is, or a team that is divided between the ones that have won everything, the likes of Messi, Suarez, Piqué, you name them, and the new players who are eager to do a great job at Barcelona, but at the same time they don't know how, or they don't know how they can, throw the door, just slam the door and make a statement saying we are as important as you were. So I think that this game is against Slavia Prague can be difficult for Barcelona. Of course, it happens a lot at Camp Nou that Barcelona wins 4-0, 5-0. They did it against Valladolid last Wednesday. But Slavia Prague are a really good team. And 2 weeks ago, they were nearly beating Barcelona. So I think that Barcelona, if they play in the same way that they've been playing lately, scoring a goal and then not having any eagerness to score a second one and therefore allowing the opponent to come back. If they play like that, with no eagerness whatsoever, eagerness to hear the final whistle but not scoring the second goal, Slavia Prague is going to put them in trouble. Luis Suarez is not playing, I forgot to say, and this may put Antoine Griezmann in the position he likes to play, which I believe is kind of a false nine position in which he managed to do very well for Atletico de Madrid and for France in Euro 2016.
Okay. As for the other game in that group, then what do you boys think? Dortmund-Inter. Who have you got, James?
Well, Inter do look tired at this moment in time, but I think they are going to get players back. And as I mentioned, with Sensi, he just adds another level of sophistication to Inter's passing game. I should also add that the player that they signed from Hertha Berlin in the summer, Valentino Lazzaro, he made his first start at the weekend. And the only other kind of appearance we'd seen from him was when he came on against Sassuolo, when they were 4-1 up and all of a sudden it became 4-3. And that was because he just didn't look comfortable and Sassuolo kept getting at him. He was much better against Bologna. He was involved in a lot of the good things that Inter did. I think Inter, if you look at their away form in the league, James, I mean, it's been sensational. 6 wins out of 6, perfect record so far. They're a team that looks comfortable defending, as you always imagine Conte sides to be. And they have an ability to get out. And I think this is something that is often underestimated about Conte, is how much detail he goes into when it comes to getting his teams to elude the press or get through the press and get his strikers in particular to connect and be in sync. And so I think, yeah, they'll go to Dortmund believing they can get a result.
Yeah, and Dortmund, I think, going to the game knowing that Inter are so dangerous, Inter are very efficient. They were the exact opposite of Dortmund. They had very little of the ball. But
Can I just say, it's so funny hearing you say those words and thinking this is, you know, Inter being efficient and dangerous. It's just kind
he's
of...
He's changed the definition of what Inter is.
Really,
but that's what a good manager can do. He can transform a side. And Dortmund, I think, will have more belief now, having shown themselves that, you know, if we just play with a bit more risk, we can actually create real problems for any opposition, even against deep-lying sides. But we need to be able to commit men forward and then just expend a bit more effort into our game. We can't just rely on the passing and hope that something sort of magically open up. And I think they'll put more pressure on the Inter than they did at the San Siro, where they created absolutely nothing.
Mm. I think, just to pick up on what James was saying, after the game on Saturday, Conte was asked by Alessandro Del Piero, who's a pundit in the TV studio, saying, you know, why did you take this job? You know, isn't it an impossible mission being Inter coach these days, or just winning in Milan? And I suppose if you put the entire context of Inter and Milan at this moment in time and what they've been in the last decade, you can completely understand why people look at it like that. And, you know, he has convinced people that they can go to the big teams and get results and challenge for silverware, which is something that was always, yeah, even when they went on really good winning streaks under Spalletti or Mancini, you never really felt that when the going got tough, Inter would stand up, be counted and get something, whereas now that has completely changed.
Wow. Well, we'll see this midweek. Loads of other big games on the way and loads of other news and stories from around the continent. We've got to Chelsea's clash with Ajax after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Chelsea hosting Ajax on Tuesday. Chelsea fresh from 8 wins in the last 9, just that defeat to Man United in the League Cup. But on Tuesday, taking on an Ajax team who've only had one defeat in their 20 matches this season, which was, of course, that 1-0 loss to Chelsea in Amsterdam last time out. Joining us now on the line from a train somewhere in the Netherlands is Mikael Jongsma. Hi, Mikael.
Good afternoon, James.
Good afternoon to you. Mikael, first off, what was the reaction last time from Ajax and the press to that first defeat of the season?
I think most people were slightly surprised about how well Chelsea actually did and slightly underwhelmed by Ajax as well. I think it's quite odd how that whole dynamic has shifted, given that they were basically plucky underdogs for almost all European games last season. Whereas this season they seem to be, runaway favorites. But it was a bit of a shock, I guess. But I don't think most people are too worried about Ajax progress so far this season, because they have been quite potent in general.
Absolutely. Tied on top of the group now with Chelsea with 6 points, 2 points clear of Valencia. Is there a lot of confidence that they can turn that result around at Stamford Bridge?
I mean, the big question at the moment is what the setup will be, because they have looked a bit shaky at the back. They generally play with two holding midfielders who are basically defenders in Martinez and Alvarez, and especially the latter has been coming in for quite some criticism. So you might actually see a more attacking Ajax side coming out, with David Neres expected to start as well. So it could really be a very exciting game this time out.
Michael, I was just wondering what the latest is as far as Erik ten Hag's position is concerned, because there's a lot of talk in Munich that he is really among the preferred candidates. Is it possible, as Mark Overmars perhaps hinted the other day, that they would release him as early as this month, or is any move only a possibility in January or in the summer?
Well, if the club in question would have been Barcelona, Manchester City, Juventus, you name it, it would have probably not been a story at all, because Ajax seemed quite keen to keep a hold of him, at least for now. But Bayern Munich, as you point out, is a bit of a different story, especially given his history there with the second team. I don't think that they will release him at this point, although Ajax have been boosted by having a pretty good run in the Eredivisie. So the title, I mean, it's not clinched already, but they're 6 points clear of AZ and 8 points clear of PSV. So they might feel confident that they can see it out with another manager as well. But all in all, I think they'll do everything in their power to keep a hold of him, because even though they still have a lot of star players, he at the moment is probably their hottest property.
Wow. I mean, they've done so well to kind of assimilate such big name departures in the past, but to lose Ten Hag would be you'd think a huge blow, unless you think there's somebody else who's ready to step in the case of problems?
Van Gaal?
Van Gaal would actually be a fairly sensible choice, but I can imagine Overmars and Van der Sar not being too happy by, having been bossed around by Van Gaal for so many years, now having to boss him around. I'm not sure if that dynamic would work. And obviously with Dick Advocaat now in another job, there's no other experienced interim to find in the Netherlands as well. So it's really difficult to see who is the most promising manager capable of taking on such a big task. I mean, Arne Slot of AZ is a name that quickly comes to mind, because he's doing really well with AZ in second. But I mean, surely just a few months as a professional head coach that comes too soon.
Mikael, you mentioned the fact that Dick Advocaat's now working elsewhere. He's taken over at Feyenoord from Jaap Stam. So that didn't work out for Jaap.
Yeah, Jaap Stam has been quite a sad story, really. Feyenoord actually had Dick Advocaat as their first choice to succeed Van Bronckhorst this summer. But when those rumors started to swirl in February, the sentiment was really negative, because Advocaat is quite old already. He's 72. And he felt, well, if the fans don't want me there, I don't want to be there either. So he called off Feyenoord, even though they basically already had agreed a deal. But now things are completely different. Jabstam has been slightly unlucky in some aspects, but not good enough in many as well. And now Dick Advocaat was the dreamed successor, basically in place to steady the ship, and that's exactly what he's done. You can already feel that the players are really taking to him well. They're really complimentary, and his first game in charge was against VVV, who themselves haven't been good recently, even though Lee Caramo is doing his best. And Feyenoord actually got quite an easy victory there, a 3-0 win. And next week they're playing RKC Waalwijk, or in that last. So, I mean, everything is looking up for Dick, basically.
Right, a magnificent way to start against his former Sunderland charge, Lee Cattermole, with VVV. Brilliant stuff. Mikael, thank you so much for being with us. Enjoy the rest of your train journey and good luck at Stamford Bridge.
Thank you. Will do.
That's the 24th managerial role of Dick Advocaat's career. Surprisingly, he never managed Feyenoord before.
What do you think about Chelsea Ajax?
I
was a bit disappointed by Ajax in the first game. I thought they ran a bit of idea. They were a bit unlucky with the Quincy Promise goal, obviously disallowed, and then Chelsea coming really strong, you know, towards the end of the game. But I was a bit disappointed by what they could offer and the lack of ideas. At some point, it looked like they ran a bit of out of idea on, like, okay, how to break down this Chelsea team that was well organized and showed a lot of maturity, I think. And I agree with his point about Martinez and Alvarez as well. They obviously lack creativity because that's not what they're used to. And I think against certain teams, it can cause problems, and hence the lack of idea they had, I think, in that game against Chelsea. So I wouldn't be surprised if Ten Hag changes a little bit his tactics and his formation.
Maybe we have to be disappointed with Ajax, but what Chelsea did at Johan Cruyff Arena was really spectacular. And I think that it is the breakthrough game of Frank Lampard at Chelsea. That one, when he got a victory that very few expected. And Chelsea, at the minute, tops the table in that Champions League group. And they lost against Valencia. Barkley missed the penalty, and Valencia didn't play better than Chelsea at all. So Chelsea is doing really well, considering that they've got a new manager with plenty of youth.
With better finishing, Chelsea could have actually beaten Ajax by a greater margin and put that game to bed earlier, because Hudson-Odoi in particular, Mason Mount, missed some really good chances in the first half. So I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what reaction Ajax can give in this game.
What about Spurs and their journey to Red Star in Belgrade? Spurs, who pretty much the only game they've won of late was that massive victory over Red Star at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, but Belgrade at the Maracanã is going to be a different kettle of fish, Jules.
Yeah, massively. And we remember last season, Liverpool losing there and just being completely outplayed by this Red Star team. So it would be different atmosphere, completely different kind of game as well, because it was far too easy for Spurs at home against Red Star, who just didn't put a fight at all. I think they will be, especially after being humiliated 5-0 away, we want a revenge, I think, this midweek. And it will be far much harder, I think, for Spurs to get anything in a game that they really have to get something.
A draw would be enough to keep Spurs in second place in the group behind Bayern Munich. But Red Star only a point behind them, so it's a delicate fixture.
I wonder if Harry Kane is going to be back, because he missed the Everton game. And Lucas Moura and Son up front didn't look particularly great, especially Lucas Moura. Some said last season that the Spurs were better without Harry Kane, but what we saw at Goodison Park this weekend proved that that is not the case this season.
All right, Red Star have won 9 of their last 10 matches in all competitions, the one exception being that defeat at Spurs, which was admittedly 5-0, which will bolster Tottenham's morale a certain amount, but a delicate game. That's coming up on Wednesday. After this, let's tackle some of the big stories in the Liga.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Alvaro, so Barcelona didn't win, Atletico didn't win, Granada didn't win after Real Sociedad took a taxi and beat them there. What was that about?
Well, the story is very simple to explain, really. Real Sociedad traveled or wanted to fly to Granada, right. And it was impossible for weather reasons. So they ended up landing in Malaga with plenty of time.
Okay.
And the club tried to rent a bus to go from Malaga to Granada, which is around 2 hours trip, more or less. There were no buses left, or the club just couldn't manage to find any bus. And they got 11 taxis.
They did a Niall Quinn. That's remarkable. What was the fare?
The fare was 204 euros.
Ah.
204 euros. Real Sociedad apparently gave a 6 euro tip for each cab ride, so mm-hmm. 210 in total. And they arrived to Granada, sorry, with plenty of time. Good for them, because the game was played at 8:45 p.m. Spanish time, and they arrived at Granada around 3:45. So,
right.
No problem for Real Sociedad, obviously, but it was the funniest story of the weekend, yes.
Anyway, they didn't win, and neither did Barcelona, as we heard before, and Real Madrid only drew 0-0 at home. Oh, sorry, were they at Real Betis?
No, at Bernabeu.
Wow, okay. Eden Hazard scored what looked like a very nice goal, but that was called back.
Yes.
And what else did they come up with?
Well, Real Madrid had 9 shots on target, mm-hmm. But they didn't score a goal. And I was checking these stats by Opta, which are quite interesting. Real Madrid this season has scored 24 goals from 209 shots, mm-hmm. which is their worst average in the decade, followed by last season's average. So basically, when Cristiano Ronaldo left, the scoring ability of Cristiano of Real Madrid has gone down really badly.
I understand that they plan to resolve these scoring problems by buying in Raheem Sterling from Manchester City.
Yeah, this is something that the Sky has published.
Right.
I haven't seen that published in any Spanish diary for the time being. Neither mm-hmm. Marca, neither AS, which are the newspapers normally that break news about Real Madrid, haven't mentioned this.
Does that suggest to you that it's the fruit of someone's fantasy?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. Of course, Real Madrid is going to offload a couple of players.
Right.
Two of them being, I guess, that Gareth Bale and James Rodriguez at some point.
Uh-huh.
And it was funny because this weekend, James Rodriguez and Gareth Bale left Santiago Bernabeu in the 80th minute of the game against Betis. The club allows that to the players, so they can leave, so they avoid the traffic congestions, leaving the stadium.
What?
But at the same, yes, Real Madrid allows that, apparently. But normally, this is something that players don't do, especially when Real Madrid hasn't wrapped up the result yet.
Yeah.
So Gareth Bale and James Rodriguez and Mariano left Santiago Bernabéu before the game was over.
That's quite extraordinary. Do you think that Manchester City and Chiqui Begiristain would be at all interested in sending Raheem Sterling to Real Madrid in exchange for Gareth Bale and some money?
Everyone has a price, but I really don't think so. I really don't think so, because Gareth Bale doesn't have a reliability record in the terms that he's been missing plenty of games over the last 5 years.
Okay, so Real Madrid have Champions League action. They are taking on Galatasaray.
Yes, they are. Galatasaray won this weekend, but they are having their worst start to a season under Fatih Terim.
Mm.
And Real Madrid needs to win because they've got only 4 points after 3 games. And of course, a victory will be really important to get 7 and then look at the game against PSG with a different attitude.
They're only 2 points clear of Bruges. Who are Bruges facing, Jules?
PSG.
PSG. In Paris.
Will we see the PSG ultras or not?
I don't know. Will
this
we
is
not?
The big thing. No, we've got a lot of problems with ultras and French clubs at the moment. At Nice, they were not happy and showed like critical banners towards the players. At Bordeaux, they are at war with the club and they want the CEO resigning. So they didn't do anything for the first 10 minutes and then start cracking up flares and everything and put a real atmosphere in it. We've seen problems at Lyon as well with the ultras and Marcelo, the centre-back. Exchanging insults, and then after the Benfica game, and then this weekend he got to another level when the ultras insulted Marcelo, and his family for the whole game, pretty much to the point that he can't actually play against Benfica. Far too risky for Rudy Garcia. Yeah,
you're
it's
kidding.
Really that bad.
Why are they so upset with Marcelo?
So after the Benfica game, when Lyon, remember, lost 2-1 a big mistake from the goalkeeper, the ultras waited for the team at the Lisbon airport, and on the way to the plane, Marcelo had an incident, an altercation with some of the ultras. They insulted each other, almost had a fight. And the ultras haven't forgiven him for it. So now he's really the one that they're targeting all the time. Him, his family, some of his performances, obviously. And it got so bad that Garcia is against the idea of playing him at home in midweek because of that, because the atmosphere is so hostile around him.
It's
so
such a crucial game as well for
it
them.
It is huge for them. And at least they wanted the weekend, like you said, which they really needed. They didn't play that well. And Memphis Depay, who was the saviour again, scored very late against Toulouse, a great individual goal to win the game. Mm. But they need to play better against Benfica midweek if they want to win that game.
All right, well, we'll come on to some Liga news in a second. Just to wrap things up from La Liga, quick word on the genius that is Alberto Moreno, redefining the art of clearing.
Yeah, with a crazy bicycle kick. It looked like
it's actually a handstand, I think he does. He's completely upside down, but supporting himself with his hands and kicks the ball. I mean, it's a very effective
this
clearance.
This is genius, because he's watching the ball before he then executes the handstand.
The reaction. The reaction to it. Otherwise, the guy is through on goal as well. So
he deserves
really
a big club. I think he could go and play for Liverpool.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Villarreal are a big club.
Villarreal are all right, and they are benefiting from having Alberto Moreno.
Right.
But this mix of breakdance and being possessed by a spirit movement, it's a very weird clearance. Yes.
As they say, it's not football, it's La Liga. Mm. All right, let's talk about Ligue 1 after this. Jules, I don't feel we've spent enough time talking about PSG losing to bottom of the table Dijon on Friday night.
It was a horror show.
Well, how did it happen?
Bad. I mean, they took the lead. They never really looked into being into the game. They were beaten on every challenges, every second balls. They just Dijon wanted it more than them. They were really up for it, and the crowd was up for it as well. And I think they sensed very quickly, despite Mbappe scoring early, they sensed very quickly that they could do something to this PSG team that, one, had a lot of players missing, to be fair. And someone like Marquinhos, who now he's more of a centre midfielder than a centre back, was all over the place at the back. Keylor Navas looked like he was on a bad day as well. So, I mean, for a win like this to happen, Dijon had to really be over the best, if you want, and all players being up for it and not making any mistakes and having a bit of luck, which they did. And on the other hand, PSG 2 not being really into the game and make mistakes individually, like Keylor Navas did, for example, and also not having the focus that they usually have.
Yeah, it's Liga, they don't care.
There's still 7 points clear. Yeah, I really believe that. And no, but to be fair, I think
We've seen this before. I remember them you saying this before. It's Liga, like Ibra saying, it's hard to even, you know, find
sometimes
any motivation.
Yeah. And also I think the focus very quickly shifts onto the Champions League anyway for them. Now that's the main objective, trying to do for once a good campaign in the Champions League. And I think, although it's the first time that they lose three in the first 12 games since 2010, I think.
So, and they're still 7 points clear.
Still 7 points clear. On Angers as well. If it was a bigger team behind them, you think, okay. But
so you've got 7 point gap down to Angers, and then Angers are part of a group of eight teams who are just 2 points apart. A lot of leagues seem to be like this right now. In that group of eight teams, you've got André Villas-Boas' Marseille, who had a 2-1 win over Lille. Also Saint-Étienne, who are eighth. They beat Monaco on Sunday night. A little bit further down, you get down to Lyon in 10th place. And as we mentioned, a huge game for them against Benfica in their attempts to secure a qualifying spot from their Champions League group. At the moment, you've got RB Leipzig on 6 points, then Zenit and Olympique Lyon on four, and then Benfica only a point behind them. And you mentioned Memphis Depay. What a magnificent winning goal it was from him.
Le ballon pour Memphis qui va y aller en solo. Memphis une fois, deux fois. Et au bout du temps additionnel, c'est l'homme providentiel.
He has been really good. It's always the same debate on should you play for him or should he, basically build your team around him, putting him in the best position because he's capable, clearly, of moment of brilliance like that no one else in that squad can do. Or do you need him to be a bit more collective and a bit more part of the team, if you want? And I think in the last two games, especially, he has been their best. I don't know where they would be without him this season, really. He's been that good. And yeah, okay, sometimes he disappears and sometimes he is a bit selfish and he should pass the ball a bit more and he should maybe behave a bit differently and not wear Louis Vuitton holders like he did on French television last weekend. But he's still an incredible talent, and I think that would be crazy not to build a team around him. And I think Garcia has understood it. And this game is big, especially because of the points they dropped against Benfica through that incredible Anthony Lopez blunder. And this is a huge game, as you said, for them at home as well, with the next two games coming, to make a move towards qualification.
Jules, I must stop you. Rafa's woken up. Rafa.
God.
That's harsh.
That is harsh.
I like to let others shine, you know. I don't have to always get involved.
He's not a team player.
I'm not suffering from...
He's the Memphis Depay of
the I'm not suffering from low confidence that I feel I always need to...
It's more you listening to the others more than letting them talk.
No, but I just wanted to ask Jules if a different top, let's say, with a massive Gilles Chi logo or something would have been better.
Listeners, that is what Julien is wearing at this
There's
moment
nothing
in time.
What's wrong with a Givenchy top? I mean, right. Hoodie. I don't think there is.
Okay.
You're having a go at...
Jules is in a glass house and he's throwing stones.
Yeah. There's a difference between a Givenchy hoodie and a Louis Vuitton holder like Memphis.
There is a lot of difference.
There is a lot of difference.
So, Jules, how confident are you that Lyon, with Marcelo not available because of the fans, with the fans kicking off, with the goalkeeper suffering a bit of a crisis, with Rudy Garcia being the manager, how worried are you that Lyon can get through this crucial game against Benfica?
I really think this is the game to watch, because the whole build-up has just been so incredible that I think there will be a lot of things happening in this game, in the stands and also on the pitch, with Benfica now top of the table in Portugal, by the way, which was not the case when they played the reverse fixture back in Lisbon. So full of confidence. Pizzi is back as well for them. And then, you know, a lot of things could depend on that game. Obviously, depending on what's happening between Zenit and RB Leipzig. So, huge game for Lyon. Yeah. Probably the most important one for them this season, and for Rudy Garcia, of course.
Well, the Leipzig game actually kicks off early. So, by the time that we come to the Lyon-Benfica game, we'll know just how precarious their position is. Of course, you can follow all of this on The Gold Show on BT Sport. Right, what else happened in Serie A this weekend? Well, first of all, we mentioned way back at the start Verona's 2-1 win over Brescia, which hit the headlines because of the racist abuse of Mario Balotelli. It also subsequently saw Brescia fire their manager, Eugenio Corini, in what seems a little bit of a harsh decision, though. I mean, they're Brescia and they're not in the relegation zone. What's not to like?
Yeah, he got them up. A lot of other managers have tried and failed to do that. His team plays good football, diamond in midfield. He's kind of helped Sandro Tonali realise his kind of potential, and I think was a factor in Tonali deciding to stay as well at Brescia. And also, you know, Balotelli late last night also issued put out an Instagram post saying, you know, he's not just a very good coach, but he's a great guy as well. Mm. And they've played a lot of the top sides, and they've all been really close games, particularly against Inter in midweek. Yeah, I thought they deserved to actually, well, certainly not lose, get something out of that game. Fabio Grosso has been appointed. It did look like it was going to be Diego Lopez, the former Cagliari coach. We mentioned that because Massimo Cellino, former Cagliari owner, now owns Brescia, so it's getting one of his mates in, but he's gone with Grosso.
Fatto Grosso.
Exactly. So we'll have to see what he can do. Grosso, who got Bari into the playoffs, he got Verona into the playoffs. Verona then sacked him and went with someone else to get them promoted. So we'll have to see with Grosso in his first job in the Serie A what he gets up to.
All right, classic stuff from Cellino. Meantime, elsewhere in Serie A, there was the Turin derby.
Se come diceva Umberto Eco, senza Torino l'Italia sarebbe molto diversa, immaginiamoci cosa sarebbe Torino senza il derby, senza questa notte, senza Toro Juve.
Yeah, lovely intro there too. The big game in Turin from DAZN, part of their pre-game presentation, Willy Piotte and Shade.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of Willy Piotte's work generally, but he does have a song which I think is quite appropriate for this weekend, which is Io non sono razzista, ma...
Okay, I'm not a racist, but...
Chi dice io non sono razzista, ma è una razzista, ma non lo sa.
Nice. Who says to you, I'm not a racist, but is a racist, and they don't know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do tell us about your trip to the Turin Derby.
It was cold, James.
Right.
It was cold, it was misty, it was a battle, this game. It wasn't one where you'd say they played champagne football. And to be honest, Maurizio Sarri expected that because Torino in crisis mode. If you look at the week that they had, they'd gone to Rome, they got battered by Lazio 4-0. And when they returned to Turin, they were told that, guys, collect your things. We're going to go and stay at the Doubletree Hotel in Lingotto. We're going to put on some extra training sessions. You're not going to see your families until we sort this out. And Torino, without playing particularly well, were at least competitive
right
in this game, which was ultimately decided by Matthijs de Ligt.
And in a good way for once.
In a good way, in that he got his first goal. It was the first goal scored by a Dutchman for Juventus since Edgar Davids. And Edgar Davids' goal came against Torino in the derby. But there was a lot of outcry, particularly from Torino, about a handball offence.
Mm. By De Ligt, no?
De Ligt has been involved in four of these in the last four games.
It's in flagrant delictus.
Wandering hands.
Yes. But the referee and the video assistant referee judged it was not an offence because his arm was close enough to his body and it wasn't in an unnatural position.
Right, right. Good goal, though. No, he took it well, I thought.
Yes, and again, Gonzalo Higuain came on and really made a difference. He was the player who basically kept the ball in play, squared it to De Ligt, and that was the only goal of the game. Sarri was on fantastic form, both before and after this game. He was asked by the local Turin press, it's your first derby win, you must be happy with that. He's like, well, no, I won three derbies when I was manager of San Giovanese against Montevarchi, which is, you know, sort of Tuscan fourth division stuff, which was brilliant. On both press conferences I went to with him, the lights were really kind of strong on him, and he was bent down, not looking at them, and he eventually got them to turn the lights away, and he said, "God, it's like a Stasi interrogation." This is it.
Nice. Montevarchi, of course, famous for its Prada outlet.
Is that right?
Now
look at you.
Well, Rafa can say that because he's not criticizing Memphis Depay.
Exactly.
So, but
just say that Memphis was not just inspired with that outfit. That's all.
But best player in this game was Salvatore Sirico, the
Torino
goalkeeper, who made a series of brilliant saves to deny De Ligt in the first half from a very similar situation. Ronaldo as well, later 1v1 with Aaron Ramsey, who came on in this game. So for Torino, it was a better performance. For Juventus, I think since the Derby d'Italia, before the last international break, when they were outstanding, they look a little bit tired. Things aren't going as well as they were. They're not playing as good football, certainly, as they were. I think partly because Pjanic, for me, was rushed back for this game after the injury he suffered against Lecce.
Well, they'll all be Russian next because they've got another cold game. They've got to go all the way to Moscow to take on a Lokomotiv team that gave them a bit of a scare in Turin 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and again, I think their performances in that game and since then have all been fairly similar. They've struggled to play as fluently as they did against Spal and against Inter. And I think it's primarily because they've suffered a lot of injuries. That's the second cycle of seven games in 21 days. But they are getting players back. Douglas Costa is back. He came on in midweek, and Sarri seems to be really excited about the prospect of him playing as a 10.
Would that affect Dybala?
Well, no, because Dybala's been playing alongside Cristiano.
Right.
Rather, there's a 10.
So two up top with Costa in behind.
And the thing is, they've used so many different 10s over the last few weeks. Ramsey was the first one.
Right.
Bernardeschi, Bentancur.
Right.
And now he wants to try Costa there, which I think would probably lead Ramsey to maybe play where Khedira has as a number 8 in midfield. Well, but I mean, that could be really exciting.
We shall see. So they're playing early on Wednesday away in Moscow, also in that group, Bayer Leverkusen, hosting Atletico Madrid. Briefly, Napoli in Liverpool's group, currently leading that group, are hosting Red Bull. Should be some goals in that.
Yeah, although Napoli really going through the motions at the moment. They obviously lost against Roma in a big game at the weekend. And they took the lead twice against Atalanta in midweek and were twice pegged back. And the club has made this decision today that they do what essentially Torino did, was like, you're going to a hotel.
In Ritiro.
And you're not going to be allowed back to your house and see your family until you sort this out. And Carlo Ancelotti today has come out and said, I don't agree with this decision. I think the president's wrong to do it. So signs that all is not well at Napoli.
Oh, a quick word then on Free Lunch FC, a.k.a. Atlanta, who will be hosting Man City, still on 0 points in the group. So leaving it late.
0 points in the group?
0 points.
They're going to do a Newcastle United. They're going to do a Newcastle United and qualify after having 0 points.
That would be amazing. Well, it's not impossible because they're 4 points off second, but they would need to beat City this midweek.
And they lost to Cagliari on Sunday lunchtime.
Didn't even score this time.
Cagliari were brilliant. And Josip Iličić was sent off after 38 minutes. But even before that, Cagliari had outplayed them and really surprised me. Cagliari making their best start since they actually won the title in 1969-70. Mm. And it was interesting listening to the manager after the game, Rolando Moran, because he says, we learnt from Man City. Yeah. We're not presumptuous enough to think we're as good as Man City, but we looked at the blueprint that they had when they played against Atalanta. We thought, can we do something like this? And they did. And as you mentioned, James, this was the first time that the league's top scorers had not scored this season. They didn't even have a shot on goal until the 80th minute.
Wow.
Atalanta still without Zapata as well. Yeah, not maybe going into this game in as fine fettle as it looked last week when they beat Udinese 7-1.
Right, well, in a second or two, an exciting final part of this European edition of the Totally Football Show. Right now, though, here's producer Ben talking to our friends at Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, or danke schön, I should say, Jimbo. Lee Price from Paddy Power's on the line, and we're going to start with Germany, where Borussia Mönchengladbach have been top of the Bundesliga for a month now. Lee, can they stay there?
Something's definitely happening there, but the same can't be said for our title, Ben. We have Gladbach at 25-1 to win the title, with our traders tipping them to finish fourth, one place better than last year. Bayern remain odds-on favourites to win the title despite that defeat over the weekend, and they even shortened a little in the betting after Niko Kovac's sacking was confirmed. They're 2-5 to win the Bundesliga. You can get Dortmund at 7-2 and Leipzig at 9-1.
OK, to the Champions League then. There won't be any Ajax fans at Stamford Bridge cheering them on, so what are the odds on last year's semi-finalist beating Chelsea?
It's hard to bet against Chelsea at the minute, isn't it? And their performance in Amsterdam the last round will definitely do their confidence no harm. Or ours indeed. We make Frank Lampard's men 5-6 to win this, with Ajax a chunky 11-4, the same price as the draw. Chelsea now 4-7 to win the group, and a massive 1-10 to go through.
And finally, the Europa League. Celtic got the better of Lazio 2 weeks ago, so can history repeat itself in Rome?
It's a big price if it does happen. It's 4-1 Celtic win in the Stadio Olimpico. The hosts are big favourites, of course. They're 8-13 to get the win. The draw is 11-4. Despite that, Celtic are favourites currently to win Group E. It's even money they finish top of the group.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Rafa, are you excited about the Europa League this week? Yes.
Very much, yep. James.
And which game in particular has got you so excited?
Well, Borussia Mönchengladbach Roma, I think, right. Would be very exciting.
Okay. The first leg between them
was not so exciting.
It was an outstanding performance by the Scottish referee that saw Roma draw 1-1, and they were very unhappy about that.
Yes, because he gave a handball against Chris Smalling when it clearly hit his face. And Roma, who... At that
easy
moment,
mistake to make.
At least it wasn't his armpit. I mean, but Roma felt, you know, they had victory snatched from them. And I have to say, Paolo Fonseca's doing a magnificent job with Roma in very difficult circumstances. Remember, we were talking last week about them trialling Jack Rodwell because they had so many injuries in midfield and so many injuries just all over the pitch. And yet they have won 3 games in a row since that Gladbach draw. And they're playing really good football. Zaniolo scored 4.
Yeah, that lovely goal at the weekend against Napoli.
Wonderful team goal as well, with Gianluca Mancini, who's a centre-back, playing in midfield. Mm. Jordan Veretout, formerly of Aston Villa, playing well as well.
And Chris Smalling, who's just blossomed in the last 2 or 3 games. What, his first goal for the club? Magnificent goal line clearance as well in the Napoli game.
Yeah, no, and Roma... keen to make his signing permanent because
when Smaldini, as you were mentioning,
Smaldini or Smaldaier for the Roma fans. But yeah, I mean, initially that loan was just a loan. There was no option to buy, no obligation. But Roma very keen to take Smalling to the capital on a permanent basis, and I think it's completely justified given the way he's been performing so far this season.
Right, brilliant. Okay, well, that's the side that will be visiting Borussia Mönchengladbach on Thursday night, a night of fixtures that will also see Dudelange, Ange, the exciting Luxembourg side that's causing shockwaves in continental football, who's Sevilla. Wolves are up against Slovan Bratislava. Lazio and their horrible fascist fans, although that's obviously not all their fans, but there were a lot of them who were parading up and down in Glasgow for the first leg of that, will be hosting Celtic, while Rangers themselves host Porto. Alvaro, is there a fixture that you're particularly fired up for?
Well, I think that Dudelange Sevilla is one of these games in which Sevilla can qualify mathematically if they get 3 points. And I'm really happy to see that Spanish clubs are doing well in the Europa League, because I think that the Europa League normally is an indicator of how good your league is. And the likes of Getafe and especially Espanyol, they are having a bad time in La Liga this season. And they are still, at the minute, they will be qualified for the next round.
It's a long wait till Thursday, but luckily there's some Champions League to tide us over in the meantime. And I'm looking forward to seeing you guys, Alvaro. Hopefully you'll be tuning in as well. We'll catch up with you next week. But the goal show kicking off early on Tuesday, of course, bringing you early coverage of the Barcelona clash with Slavia Prague. That's on BT Sport 1, followed by our usual merry-go-round around the grounds of all the Champions League action. For now, though, it's many, many thanks to Alvaro, Julien, to Rafa and James, and producer Charlie, and you, listener. Have yourself a great week of European action, and we'll be back here next Tuesday to look back on it all and forward. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.